You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini on the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Ben Leibovich. Ben, how you doing?
Ken, how are you? I'm great.
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So Ben is a fellow blogger on Bigger Pockets. He's been on there for a number of years. If any of you have ever been on Bigger Pockets and read the blog, I'm sure you've run across Ben or been on the forums. So I thought it'd be interesting to have a fellow blogger on the show to talk about his experience in real estate and how he got started and what he's doing today. So Ben, if you could maybe just take us back to the beginning. How did you get started in real estate?
My story really is pretty well known. I've discussed it, so I don't want to take a lot of time to talk about it. But essentially, I'm a violinist. I'm a classically trained violinist. I went to school at Cincinnati College Conservatory, one of the great schools in the nation for classical music. But in my second year of master degree, I experienced some things physiologically. And it resulted in a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, which is an autoimmune condition that can lead to very significant loss of mobility. And so the doctors just basically told me, look, you know, we don't want you to do anything rash, but it's apparent that probably planning on making money with a fiddle in your hands and fine motor skills and things like that may be not in the cards at this point. So, that was a difficult period. I played violin since the age of five. That's all I really knew. That's all I wanted to know. Loved music, still love music. But depression kind of came and went. And when it went, I started looking into what my options were. And one thing led to another. I arrived at real estate as probably the thing to try. Seemed more reasonable than anything for a few reasons. Most importantly, I think, the fact that I realized that you don't need money because, you know, I didn't have any money. So, If you know how to do it, you know, you can get things done and the money will find you. And that was kind of an eye-opening experience. So that's how I landed upon real estate. And that was about, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago now.
Were you listening to any CDs or audio tapes, or who were you following that sort of impressed you and got you into real estate?
So, yeah, I mean, I've heard the infomercials just like everybody else. I read some books out of the library which, you know, tell you about 25% of what you really need to know in order to paint the full picture.
Right, right.
But what really, I think, did it were two things. One, when I was in college, I had a classmate. He was in the same class with me. His father was an attorney. And he came into town. Okay, I was already finishing my undergraduate degree, going into master's, and he had just begun starting master degree or bachelor degree. And they bought a house across the street from campus, and they put locks on all of the bedrooms, and he became a landlord. Okay, and I had a few conversations with him, and back in the day, it made no sense to me whatsoever why anybody would want to willingly deal with leaky toilets and faucets and college students and all that nonsense. Okay, what I realized eventually is he was living for free. Mm-hmm. That was one thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is when I graduated from college, there was an opportunity to start a nonprofit music school in this little town called Lima, Ohio, which is about 2 hours north of Cincinnati, 2 hours northwest of Columbus. an hour north of Dayton, just to give you an idea of where it is. But my fiance Patricia at that point and I got in the car and we came to Lima to drive around, see where we'd want to live, because it really looked like I was going to be signing a contract to build this music school called the Music Factory. And I called the telephone numbers, and one of the guys I called, one of the landlords I called, I ended up having a really long, I mean, we're talking about 45 minutes to an hour conversation. And one thing just kind of led to another, and I told him I had this interest, which by then I had, in real estate. I told him I had no money, and then he reaffirmed this concept. He said, you don't need any money, you just need education. And, you know, he's passed on since then. That was the only meaningful contact I had with him. He was a very sick man. His wife did all the paperwork. She did all our lease signing and everything else. So I never actually met him face to face. He's a big presence in town, but I never met him face to face. But that's what kind of gave me the impetus to look. I've been blessed with mentors at every stage mm-hmm. of this journey. But that was the first. I never met the guy, but I almost talk about him as a mentor, because that's what gave me the hope, call it hope or audacity or the cojones to actually go and try to figure out what it is he's talking about. You don't need any money. So that's what kind of teed up the whole thing, and he surely was right. You don't need any money.
So you set out after that conversation. I guess you ended up moving to Lima.
Yeah.
So you ended up doing the music school.
Yeah. And for a couple of years, I was preoccupied with the music school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my health was holding up. It's still holding up. Things were fine. Things were good. But what happened then is that about the second year in this town, I did my taxes, and I paid an awful lot in taxes comparatively to how much I made. Mm-hmm. And that's what drove the message home, that if you're going to be middle class, you're going to be screwed. You have to either be rich or poor. In our economy. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
In our economy. If you're going to be in the middle, if you think you're going to make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, and you're going to do it via W-2 or 1099, you're going to get it up places where you don't want it. and so now that message synthesized with the existing interest in real estate, which I kind of put on hold in order to build the school, and I started looking much more seriously and seeking out information. And then I bought my first building, which was actually driving for dollars. I bought my first house in probably, I think, 2005 or something around there.
Gotcha. And that was literally just, you had gotten to the point where, you know, I'm tired of paying taxes, I'm going to figure this thing out. And you were literally driving neighborhoods looking for the right opportunity?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not so much that I got tired of paying tax. Nothing wrong with paying taxes. But I knew that my earning potential in that music world was so limited that the taxes were killing me.
Sure.
So I wouldn't mind paying a higher, you know, proportion, percentage of taxes if you're making a lot more, you know. So if you're making $300,000, you can pay $100,000 in taxes and still have a very nice life.
Sure.
The ironic thing about it is that if you make $300,000 the right way, you're not paying $100,000 in taxes.
Sure.
You know, and that's what people don't understand. We you and I, we work on systems.
Yep.
Because that's, that's a lot less expensive money.
Yep.
To us. But I made decent income that year, but it wasn't so decent that I could afford to sustain that kind of effective tax rate and get ahead in life.
Sure.
And don't forget, this is still overimposed, the notion that I don't know how many working years I have. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm told I have MS. I could be in a wheelchair whenever, you know. So I gotta make something out of nothing, and earning money this way and paying so much money in taxes doesn't help, frankly.
Well, and you were probably also motivated to start creating as much passive income as you could. You
know, correct. That
makes a ton of sense.
I mean, that's why I chose to go with a school, because, you know, I can manage a school out of a wheelchair. I can teach a student out of a wheelchair if I have to.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't totally passive income, but it was a hell of a lot more passive than sitting on stage and playing in an orchestra.
Sure. Yep. All that makes a ton of sense. And same thing with acquiring properties.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, that would create passive income for you.
That's exactly it. That's why there are certain things in real estate I just plain won't do. Mm-hmm. Such as flipping or a turnkey.
Yeah.
I don't need to work that hard.
Sure.
I don't have a right to build a business that I'm working in, and if something happens to me, my wife and kids are stuck with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. You really are an investor from the truest sense. You're looking to invest long-term, create wealth, create passive income for yourself. And it sounds like that was sort of the path that you set out on.
Correct.
So then over the course of 13 years, you've put together, compiled a portfolio of properties there, specifically in Ohio, or where are most of your properties located?
Yeah. All of the property I own solely is in Ohio. Everything is within, the furthest one I have is a little sixplex that I have. It's about a 40-minute drive in a town next door. But all of the rest of the property is literally within 10 minutes drive from my house.
And that's fantastic. And is most of it multifamily or single family?
I have three singles left in my portfolio. The rest of it is multi.
Okay. Gotcha. Is there a reason you prefer multi over single?
There are a lot of reasons. The value add works a lot better. The cash flow is a lot more stable. The capex is cheaper. You name it.
Yeah.
I don't know that we have time to have that conversation, but there are a lot of reasons why I prefer multi.
Sure. Well, the simple economies of scale. Everything's under one roof. I mean, I think most people probably.
Sure. And again, it ties into the management, right?
Sure.
So do I want to manage 10 units in one location, or do I want to manage 10 units in 10 locations?
Sure. Absolutely.
So it adds to the passivity of things.
Yeah. So then having, you know, a handful of years where you were acquiring properties, any properties that stick out to you as maybe your best deal ever?
I think my best deal ever, let's frame this conversation in terms of the deal I learned most on.
All right. That's fair.
It's my best deal. And that's a deal that lost $20,000.
Okay. Your worst deal ever actually ended up being your best deal ever because you learned
from it. Well, it's my best deal because I didn't give up after that. A lot of people, I think, would have, and I very seriously considered it, but thankfully I didn't. But it was a flip, Ken. Mm. You're going to love this, man.
Nice.
It was a flip. I bought it for $45,000.
Okay.
I projected the ARV to be between $115,000 and $120,000.
Okay.
It was an old house on a basement. It needed everything. I mean, it legitimately needed a $40,000. Hell, it had probably, you know, 35 windows or something silly like that.
Oh,
at $300 an opening, mm-hmm. You can add that math, right? So it needed HVAC. It needed flooring. It needed bathrooms. It needed everything. It needed every fixture. It needed a brand new kitchen. I mean, this thing was supposed to be a $35,000 or $40,000 rehab. I don't know. It's a decade ago. I can't remember. But it's in CFFU. I have to tell people about this because it was so formative. So it's in my Castle Freedom University. But I had a bad contractor. This is back when I couldn't tell a rafter from a footer. Okay, bad way to start investing in real estate. Everybody talks about numbers. This isn't about the numbers. The numbers are just the 10,000 foot in the air bird's eye view of a transaction. most of the stuff that makes us money or loses money happens past the numbers. Mm-hmm. And there's very few people who understand this reality. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a bad contractor. By the time I figured it out, it cost me $20,000. I had private money financing on the deal. The only reason I got out of it is because my propensity for finance. And so I was able to finance myself out. I got the investor capital out, principal and interest. But it skimmed me $20,000 worth, and I carried it. I since then was able to wrap it into another property. So it's fine. But it taught me what to do and what not to do. And it also taught me that when you're analyzing a flip and it's looking like $25,000 of profit, that's not much. Ken, I mean, I'd be doing flipping in Ohio if I could have $75,000 spreads. Mm-hmm. Because I know that things can go wrong and cost you $25,000 in the blink of an eye.
Sure. Yep.
That's what I know now. I didn't know at the time. That's what I know now. And so why people ask me, how come I don't flip? Because in my town, where the average house sells for between 80 and 120, my average profit margin would be $10,000-$15,000. Mm-hmm. And that's not a profit margin as far as I'm concerned, certainly not one that justifies the risks of doing this whole process.
Well, and so I'm just curious, in your town, what's the average age of a home too in that price point? They're probably older styles.
That's correct. That's so correct.
All sorts of unknowns behind
all
the walls.
All sorts of unknowns. Sure. You know, if you go out to a place like Arizona where everything, you know, a 1982 house is considered old, you know,
right,
you know,
right.
In Ohio, you're buying pigs for, you know, 1930.
Yeah.
If you've got something 1960, you better be buying the location.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think it's smart to point out too, you're in a different point in your life too, where you've had the opportunity to acquire a portfolio that creates some pretty good income for you. You've got the responsibility of a school. The market you're in doesn't necessarily lend itself to flipping where you are. You've sort of got your education. You're in a good place. I completely understand where you're at. I mean, flipping houses in you know, Lima doesn't make a ton of sense for you right now.
Yeah, wherever.
Exactly.
Well, you know, yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, that comment has to do with the whole MS thing. You know,
that's true.
To me, real estate income has to be passive. First of all, it's taxed a lot lower, so I don't need as much of it. Secondly, I can build systems to manage that income if it's passive. Mm-hmm. But if it needs my involvement, then it really doesn't solve my problem, mm-hmm. which is, you know, if the doctors are right and I have only a certain amount of time, but nobody can tell me how much, then why am I building a business that needs me to run?
Mm-hmm.
And then you overimpose upon that the fact that you're working really hard and taking a lot of risk for possibly a profit of $10,000. And it's just like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do that? I've got 2 6-year-old kids at home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got plenty of things to occupy my time. I don't need to be doing that.
Sure.
And then there's the fact that, you know, I turned 40 this year. I have some cash flow. My tenants are nice to me. You know, they're paying my car payments, they're paying my mortgage, and, you know, I'm not the richest guy in the world, but it's a pretty stable income. I set money aside for capital expenses. You know, I do it the right way. And the property, the type of property that I bought, once I figured it out, the type of property that I bought is, even though it's Ohio and even though it's Lima, Ohio, it has desirability features built into it, which lend it to stability of income and stability of value and opportunities to force appreciation. The value add component mm-hmm. was always there.
Right.
Everything I've ever bought was nothing down. It was 100% financed. If anything, that's my claim to fame. I don't buy anything that doesn't lend itself to 100% finance. because then the deal isn't good enough.
Hmm.
Yeah. If the deal's, you know.
Absolutely. If the number's still working, you get high leverage. And is that typically, is your 100% financing typically because you're using partners or because you're using owner financing? Or what's your main strategy for getting
I use blends.
Okay.
I blend a lot of things. I hardly ever use owner financing. Owner financing is dangerous. Once in a while it works, but people need to understand that the reason there's owner financing attached to an asset is because the asset itself cannot be sold to the marketplace without that financing attached to it for the amount that the seller needs to get in order to get out to sell. So the question you have to ask yourself is, why is there owner financing? I'm not saying it's impossible to get a good asset with owner financing. It's possible, but it's extremely rare. Usually there's underlying problems with the asset, which is why you're getting owner financing on it. So owner financing is usually not part of the mix. Usually it's some kind of blend of portfolio financing, you know, institutional financing, and private money financing.
Yeah, I gotcha. So let me ask you this. So having, you know, come out of the gates and really had struggled on that second house where you lost $20,000, but then continuing on, you know, in the industry, acquiring more properties, you know, comes across in your blogs that you've really acquired an education in real estate, and now you like to give back that knowledge that you've learned and how to identify a property, how to analyze that property, what makes a good property. And there's a lot of good blogs that you've written to that. I know you've got a website, you know, where you talk about how to analyze properties. Do you feel like, you know, you've gotten your education over the last 10 years?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's what people don't understand. I mean, I don't want to make anybody look bad, right? Maybe I do. I'm just an ass. I don't know. But what everybody writes about is what to buy and how.
Yeah.
But I think the real value, Ken, is an answering question of what not to buy and why.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I do. That's what I've tried to do. In fact, I created this course about 3 years ago, CFFU, Cashflow Freedom University. That's all it is. I mean, yeah, there's a component of creative finance. I explain to people how I achieve 100% financing, but a huge portion of this content, there's like 20 hours of me talking to people just like this, explaining to them what to do, and like 200 pages of PDF files. This is me telling people, here's what you don't want to happen. And here's why this is exactly what's going to happen if you buy XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I underwrite about 3 deals a week. They're all 100 units and over. Markets go through cycles and people go through cycles. You know, I'm in a place in life where I don't need to be busy in order to feel accomplished. I only want to take action on something that's going to make a dramatic impact on both my balance sheet and my income statement. And outside of that, I don't really need to do deals.
Yeah, the point in life that you're in right now, that makes a ton of sense. Well, and I want to just say this as we start to wrap up, but I appreciate the fact that you are continually, even though you're not necessarily buying in the last year or two, you're continually putting out really good content, free content, for people to understand real estate, understand, you know, your mindset in analyzing deals. And you've put together a system that people can really delve into the details with a lot of content in the Cashflow Freedom University. And I'd love to, you know, at least point people in that direction. We're going to have it up on our website. Ben, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to add? I really appreciate the conversation. It's been good because it's different. It's very frank. You're in a different market than a lot of the folks we talk to. You're at a different point in your life than a lot of folks we talk to. And I think it's refreshing to hear from somebody who's, you know, who's very, very realistic when it comes to investing profitably.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. You know, you've been at it for a while. I've been at it for a while. We have perspective on this, and perspective is really what most people are missing about real estate. Like I said, the numbers aren't, you know, the numbers are just, you know, an entry point cracking the door. You got to see past the numbers. You obviously do. I do. And it's interesting. We're coming at it from slightly different perspective, but it's interesting. But I think, you know, the important thing I want people to take away from this conversation, stop thinking about how to buy and start thinking how not to buy. Because mistakes in this sport are very, very costly. And instead of worrying about putting pro forma on paper and seeing $300 or $200 cash flow or whatever and getting excited about it, it's not real unless you can see past the numbers. Then maybe it is real. But unless you can see past the numbers, you don't know. And this is what this conversation has been about. We're looking past the numbers. And I think it's great. We need more of these conversations. I try to write all my articles from this perspective, but I can only write so much. And this is what CFFU is about. This all of my content, anybody who signs up on my email list, the content's just, it's awesome. I don't hold back.
He puts out some really, really strong content. It's not fluff. It's very numbers and fact-based. So I would encourage anybody to check it out. Again, we're going to have it on our website, dealfarm.net/justaskben. Ben, thanks so much for being on the show. I thought it was really insightful.
My pleasure, Ken. Thank you for having me.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you to check us out online at dealfarm.net. Feel free to download our free ebook, How to Invest in Real Estate. And do not forget, we still have our free t-shirt offer going. All you have to do to get a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt is go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Once you've done that, go to our website, email us and let us know that you've done it. Give us your address and t-shirt size, and the t-shirt will be in the mail immediately. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Take care.